eLearning Brunch, your podcast for digitalization and learning. Hi, and welcome to another podcast of eLearning Brunch. In our last episode, we talked to Bianca Robbi about creating good content and how that starts with the learning designer or instructional designer. Today, we're going to follow up that episode by taking a closer look on how to create award-winning learning content, or award-winning e-learning content, to be specific. And with me today is one of my favorite IMC colleagues, Arna Benoit. So, Arna, welcome to the podcast eLearning Brunch.
Thank you.
Edifying or basically informing our listeners about all topics, about e-learning topics. And as I said today already, we're going to dive into how to create award-winning e-learning content. So maybe give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself to get them a little bit attuned and to, of course, give a baseline of your super qualifications.
Sure. So, as many people know, at IMC at least, I'm from the Netherlands. And I think my first position in the field of education was in Amsterdam, where I worked at a training institute for school teachers and school leaders.
Okay.
And at some point there, I decided to do a master's degree in educational sciences, and I found that in Freiburg, where I just wanted to spend a year abroad. I felt 1 year, but 10 years later now I'm still in Freiburg.
You're stuck in Freiburg, okay.
Yeah. And I think after 1 year I joined IMC, so next to my studies as a working student, and later got a position as an instructional designer. And at IMC, I created a bunch of digital trainings for all kinds of companies. So many companies in Germany, like Zeiss, T-Systems, and Festo, but also many international organizations, such as United Nations agencies and the International Red Cross and Red Crescent. And and currently I'm mostly involved in off-the-shelf content, which we are all going to talk about.
And that's why we called you the expert on that.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that a little bit further in the content. So
yeah.
And in our podcast.
Yeah. The development of our portfolio of products.
Okay.
So our responsive framework.
Responsive framework. Okay. That's going to be a lot of stuff to dive into. So, quick question off the roll, Arna. In our last podcast, I talked to Bianca Robbi and we discussed about the core of creating good content is the instructional or learning designer. So, where do you see yourself? Have you looked into the topic any closer? I mean, do you consider yourself a learning designer, instructional designer, or do you have another name that you would tag yourself with? Because according to Bianca, one of the things was that we talked about was basically that role instructional designer is very limited. And then you have the so-called unicorns of the group, which are the learning designers, which encompass much more than just the instruction design. So where do you see yourself on that scale? Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as a unicorn or a pony, so to say?
Yeah.
Please say unicorn.
Yeah, I think when I hear the word instruction, I think it sounds a little bit old-fashioned, maybe, like you think about direct instruction and telling someone what to do. And what many people put on their profile is now learning experience designer.
And
I think that's...
we had that topic also. We dropped that topic, yes, correct?
Yeah, because every time it is a small experience that you create. So I actually like that title. But also, of course, instruction is also a very wide term. So it's for me, both are fine.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So that's kind of like the segue to our last episode of the eLearning Brunch podcast. So let's move to today's topic, and that was creating content. In this case, award-winning content, and you were part of the team that created the content Cyber Crime Time, the game. So could you tell us a little bit about this, what Cyber Crime Time is?
Yeah, sure. So it is a serious game, and its goal is to raise awareness about cybercrime, and also to learn how to protect yourself against cybercrime. And yeah, the big twist, we'll come to that later, I think, is that the game story, the learner is put into the shoes of a typical bad guy, which is a hacker without too much moral compass, and mostly interested in just making money and using opportunities that are there.
Okay, that sounds exciting. So, as I mentioned, it was also I mean, not to wave the flag here, but we did say award-winning content. So, what awards has the content received so far, Arne?
Yeah, I think there were about 5 or 6 awards already.
Wow. Okay.
Webby Award, Learning X Award. One of the awards that that I was very proud of is the Favorite Website Award. So from the that is actually a website that I look at quite often because it's not only e-learning content but all kinds of websites, also of big companies, shops, and very custom made beautiful websites. So I was quite proud that we were one day like website of the day. But it's a big thing.
Yeah. Okay, that's pretty cool. So for everybody that's listening to the podcast, we'll provide you a link to the game later, because we do have a link on our website that you can actually play through the content or the game. Should I call it the game or the content? I'm a little confused here. Content, right? That would probably be better.
Yeah, both is fine.
Both is fine. Okay. Yeah. So I'll try to ease the confusion and flip between, you know, game and content. But I guess most listeners will be aware of what we're talking about. So as we said, this was award-winning content. So it probably was something special. In that vein, for our listeners, how long does it take to develop such a game or such content? How long did it take you and the team to develop that?
Yeah.
From start to finish, so approximately.
Yeah. So I think this game, it took us about a year. And that was also because of the fact that we wanted to make a very premium content. And we were not, as a team, not directly happy with the first idea. So I think also the phase of ideation took quite long. And and then we built a 3D world where it takes place. So the visuals and this 3D world also took a lot of time.
So with it taking approximately a year, just to give listeners an idea, because like I said, this is kind of like a deep dive into creating award-winning content. What is the time frame that you would, in general, when you create off-the-shelf content, what is in general the time frame that you need to develop that, as compared to this content in particular that we'll, like I said, get into a deeper discussion to in a minute?
Yeah, it is. It depends on how complex it is. So for off-the-shelf content, we have it in our own hands. So we can decide everything. So we can put more people on it, and we are not dependent of a customer. But usually, I think it's similar to customer projects. It takes maybe 3 months, and a year is quite long for a project. So somewhere in between, probably.
Okay. So to wrap it up, then, final question along that point, in that vein, is can you explain to our listeners what off-the-shelf content is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite simple to explain. So custom content is where a customer orders something specifically, and we create this tailored content, and that's very specific for the target audience of the customer and the organization of the customer. And off-the-shelf content is where we take the initiative ourselves and create content for a specific market, and afterwards we sell it to anyone who wants to buy it.
Okay. There is, of course, a little bit of a caveat today to that. I talked to Sven Becker, chairman of the IMC, or one of the chairmen of the IMC, and he told me that this was a proof of concept that high-quality off-the-shelf content is feasible. And his belief was also that real awareness can only be achieved through high quality. Do you share that last part of the opinion?
Yeah. What is real awareness? I think like the price, so the amount of effort that you put into it, not automatically leads to more awareness. So it is there are a lot of aspects involved. But I think.
Well, maybe he switched the topics. Maybe he meant engagement.
Yeah.
So because awareness, I think in the talk that I had with him, I think maybe engagement in the topic matter and awareness kind of are synonymous. When you take, of course, from the approach of awareness, that's one thing. But I think he also might have meant engagement in the content.
Yeah. I think, for example, if someone has a talk and is not prepared at all, you notice that, and you are probably not so motivated to listen. So I think, if you don't put effort in something, people will feel that and are not very motivated to put their effort. As a learner, you also need to put your time into it. And so it is important that the content where you invest your time in is good, I think, for everyone.
Okay. So looking at this content that you created, can you take us through the steps for creating like a standard off-the-shelf content? How do you go about that? Give our listeners a little idea of how that goes.
Yeah. So we, I, as an instructional designer, have a lot of experience in these customers projects where we have this, the boundaries are set in the beginning. So that is something where we now, for the off-the-shelf content, have a separate phase. And that is this kind of free brainstorming phase where we create ideas very quickly and then throw them away and try something else. So that is a phase where we try to find the best idea. And also where we set the scope of content that we want to discuss in a training.
Okay, is that now for the development of standard content as such? That's how you approach You were just, I think, briefly explaining the difference between the how you approach the custom content, which having worked in as a project manager in the content area, is pretty much standard. I mean, well, we have a process. So the customer comes with a need or a desire, and then we go along and have a set process, which means there's a project team that's created consisting of instructional designer or a learning experience designer, as we had called it now. And then we go to you and the project manager go to the customer and basically interview the customer on what he wants in his content. And basically on his desire and his wishes, we do a one-off product for him. In standard, and that is though a little bit different for standard, because in this case, to my experience, we don't have a customer giving us input on what they need. Rather, we do kind of one could say a market analysis. And in this case, it's partly, there's going to be a certain demand in this market, because the topic that you're obviously covering with this cybersecurity is a compliance topic. So after that, how does the process of developing the content, is that still the same for developing this off-the-shelf content as to maybe the difference of developing this high-end content? So let's first take a look at the development of the standard off-the-shelf content, if so to say.
So these two phases, the first phase for off-the-shelf content, we are quite free, as I said. We try different ideas, but the second phase is more like an operational phase where we produce the content, and many people get involved in that phase. So that's a phase where we have developers, visual designers, all the content is texted out, is translated, etc. So that's a phase where we work according to a classic waterfall model. But the first phase, that's a bit new for us, is a more iterative phase where we try out ideas and then until it's like a very good scope that we are completely happy with.
Okay. So with respect to then with respect to creating off-the-shelf content, what is the challenge in producing like standard off-the-shelf content? What would you see is the, would you consider one of the biggest challenges in that?
For us, like these two aspects compared to working with a customer. So the first aspect is this kind of scope, so this market. We have experience with many customers, so that's why we have some feeling with what the market wants. But it's still different than a customer having like a very specific wish or request. So I think that market knowledge is one specific challenge. And the other one is like the content. Usually a customer provides us has subject matter experts that have been working in this field for 20 years and know everything about it. And now we have to back that up for ourselves. So we have to make sure that it's accurate what we explain in the content.
Okay, so that's interesting that you say that, because that provides you with a completely different challenge, because when creating the custom content, you have a customer and he has a specific need and you apply it to that, versus the standard content, we're relying on basically derived knowledge. So what we know of the market and expectations. So it's there's a certain amount of uncertainty, I would say, because one, you have a customer that's, you know, directly paying for it with outcome XYZ. And in the other one, you're saying, okay, based on what we've, you know, been able to observe in the market, this is what we believe the market can use. Now, that might sound risky, but as I said before, I think it's a calculated risk, because you're, at least in this step, I would say it's a calculated risk because you're going into the field of compliance. So there's a certain amount of scope already in that field, right? So you're not completely creating something, you know, like, do you remember that movie Field of Dreams? Have you heard of that?
No, I don't know it.
No? Oh, well, it was with, what's the actor's name? Dances with Wolves. Who was the actor that played in Dances with Wolves? Do you remember?
Cool. Dances with Wolves.
Help
Kevin
me
Costner.
Out here.
That's
Help.
Not
yeah,
an
yeah,
extra.
How
are you? That was
okay,
one.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the movie, Kevin Costner basically he played some type of farmer in Idaho or somewhere, and I think he had these ghosts of baseball visit him, and basically he said, "Build it, and they will come." Right. So, I mean, in this case, you know, it wasn't just like create content and they will take it. Rather, you know, we had a market that we were able to narrow it down to, but still within that market, you don't know how it'll be accepted. So there's still a certain amount of risk involved.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's very interesting to know. So then let's delve into this a little bit deeper then. So how did you then, we've now understood basically how, you know, so one of the challenges of creating standard content and how the process that you go through for creating the standard content. Now with this, however, with this project, this is a special project because you're kind of, pushing the bounds of, you know, off-the-shelf content. Because as I said, you know, Sven Becker said, you know, this is a proof of concept that high-quality off-the-shelf content is feasible. So what makes this content then special or high-quality? And how does this process differ than in your standard process?
So your question is also about how do you create high quality content?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
what can you do?
Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. What defines high quality in your opinion? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a very broad question. It's a little bit open ended because we have a certain feeling for what, you know, quality and high quality is. But just for sake of this, you know, conversation, high quality would be above and beyond. So it's like moving from, I guess, a Mercedes-Benz to a Rolls-Royce, if we could say that. So Mercedes-Benz, already good quality, high quality, Rolls-Royce, handmade, you know, blah, blah, blah. So so that's the differentiation that I want you to make.
Yeah. So I think that's for all content. I think that's that the beginning is most important. So that if you have like one good idea that you can pull through a whole project, it's extremely important. So just starting off with okay, these are the key messages that should be part of my training, and just start creating content. I think that's never a good idea to for the quality of a project. So I think that's maybe the most important part. So that the basic idea of a training is good, But then it's, of course, a lot of work. So quality is like in all aspects. So it's for this course, for this training.
Let me rephrase the question a little bit. We can say that maybe quality isn't the let's put it this way, premium, because it's kind of like, I mean, quality is given, like I said, but premium, what, because it's above and beyond the off the shelf content as it normally is, right?
Yeah, that's what's the intention,
and it's, or could it be the other question would is this the new level of what off the shelf content should look like? Are we on a new level? You know, everybody so far has expected content to be of this nature, and now we're setting the bar higher. So, which one of those two would you say is it?
Yes. So we want to set a high bar, at least. Yeah. But it also, we were at the content department also building our framework, which had to explain, this framework is like a very basic, that's the programmed possibilities that we have in our trainings. In the last years, we have built a lot of features, such as this 3D world and all kinds of interactions. So, if you want to create premium content, then you say, okay, let's use what we have. So let's not limit ourselves, at least, and also take time to throw ideas away. That's also important, I think. So also in this project, we've created a lot of ideas and then threw them away again because we were not happy with it. And we said, no, this is not going exactly in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And then tried something else or tried something extra. And it is what we want to reach. Like it was the goal that we are completely happy with it.
So since learning developers always talk in one of the buzzwords is journey. So then take us through the development or construction journey of this content. So from the conception of the idea to the final product. Take us through the journey that you went on as an instructional designer.
Yeah.
Or as a learning experience. What was it? Learning experience. What
do we call LED? Experience designer. Yeah.
Electric light emitting diode? No. Okay, so take us on the journey. Take us on this visual journey. This is your time to shine, Arne. Yeah.
Now actually this journey also started quite visually because before I was involved in the project, Falk and Julian have been experimenting with all kinds of visual ideas. Like there was a tower in 3D that should be attacked floor by floor. And there was a school for a cybercrime school. So different ideas. They tried, and
so a lot of creative, like think tank type atmosphere.
Yeah,
throwing around ideas, seeing what matches and so forth. A very intense and creative process.
Yeah, that's what I've heard because I joined the team at some point when there was this idea from an attacker and a defender. So we had this idea. Maybe we have one hacker attacker, someone who has to defend himself.
You got in on the ground level. That's pretty early then. I mean, you know, that's a very basic idea, isn't it?
Yeah. <that point>? Yeah. Yeah. It was very open still. Mm-hmm. And at some point, but there were already some graphics. So there was like this visual idea, this a bit, very fictional, colorful world.
Mm-hmm.
This idea like of a challenge to hack something. And at some point we got rid of this defender side because that's a bit more classical. Mm-hmm. Like in many trainings you see that, okay, what do you need to do to protect yourself? And okay, you have to create complex passwords. And we thought that is not as interesting as this idea of being a hacker and being similar to these games like Grand Theft Auto, where you, mm-hmm. you can do things that you're not allowed to, but mm-hmm. it's exciting and it's...
So you decide to flip the script, so to say.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And from there on, we also started to create a lot of screens and a structure and also threw a lot of stuff away and until we had like a basic storyline, mm-hmm. a basic structure.
Quick question here. If I heard this also correctly, then one of the things that you had here as in comparison when we talk about the standard off-the-shelf content, one has to say that the IMC has a very structured development process, which means basically you analyze what you want to make. Then you basically, as an instructional designer, you put that into a didactic format, so to say, and then you hand it off to the next section, which is then responsible for designing it visually, and then at the end, programming. And from the sound of it here, though, you had almost the whole, all those elements working quite intimately together at the beginning of the project, because you had, you know, the creative part of what to do. You looked at also your development capabilities. What's our framework? What can we create within our framework? Where can we max it out, so to say? Yeah. And you also brought in the designers at the beginning with, you know, visual aids that I think normally in when developing standard content, that's not the case. Is that correct?
I think it's not that different from like a standard project. What mm-hmm. is a standard project? But we always aim to involve the different teams in the beginning. So mm-hmm. there are always designers involved in the beginning, because in the end, everything needs to come together. So it's mm-hmm. there's not this very big difference between like premium and not premium. Mm-hmm. It's, so in a way, it is also for much simpler projects where we maybe don't have so much budget or time. Mm-hmm. We also want to create like something that is maybe a little bit simpler. It doesn't have a 3D world, but we also want to create something that is like a very good product. That looks good, but maybe there are not so many different pictures in it, and there are not so many details in the pictures. Okay. If that's because it costs more time.
Makes sense. Yeah. Like I said, people can click on the link to the game, so you know, after listening to this podcast, they can visualize it better. So, but I interrupted your journey at the part where you were saying that basically you had the idea, you started working through the idea, you started getting design input on with visuals and so forth. And one of the bigger things that you said that you did more in this project than in other projects was that you had the courage, need, or whatever to throw out things and just say, no, that's not what we want. Let's, you know, did you ever go back to zero, or was it more incremental? So, I mean, did you ever throw everything out at one point and start over, or was it more of a fine tuning throughout mm-hmm. the process?
So, at the time when I was part of the project team, we didn't throw out everything. So, in the beginning, there was this idea of an attack, and it was more like throwing out parts of it to make it a little bit simpler, not making the story too complicated. We also threw out content that was maybe a little bit too technical, because this game is for a very wide audience, for everybody who is working at a company or is just interested in how can I defend myself against cybercrime. So it is everybody should be able to understand it. And so we threw out a bit of more too technical stuff that would make the training too long, because we would need to explain everything step by step.
Yeah, the training right now takes about 20, 30 minutes, I believe, is what
I think it's a half an hour.
Yeah, that's what I approximately took to click through it. It was pretty interesting. I thought it was exciting. So Okay,
yeah.
Please continue.
So at some point we created a storyboard. So that's like our classical process. And at the same time, we were creating.
Maybe quickly flesh out storyboard, because it's such an integral, thing in this process. I mean, it's the, what do you call it, Bible, or the framework which everything is based on, right? So maybe just for our listeners that are not too familiar with the subject, briefly explain what a storyboard is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so a storyboard is a document where from the instructional design perspective, all the contents are in there, all the texts from the training are in there, all the descriptions of illustrations that need to be made are described, are there. And it is like a blueprint of the training, but it's still a document. So it's not interactive, nothing's programmed yet, nothing has been illustrated. So that's like a classical first step of creating a training.
So it's kind of like if we're referring to in movie talk, it would be kind of like the script of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you're the author of this script.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you've now gotten to the stage where you've completed the script, the storyboard, and how does the process then continue? How does the journey continue at that point?
Yeah, I think from there on, we went quite, so what we did is we had to illustrate everything. So that was, Falk was involved in that. And from there on, it was created as 3D objects. So we had also someone creating this 3D world. And at the same time, we have our framework, which is a little bit this technical basis of the training. And there we created also some new functionality, things that were not possible. Yeah, that's a little bit technical maybe. But also,
it had to
be programmed.
So basically the framework is, no, I'll let you explain it. If I try to explain it, I think I'll really get into trouble. But once again, just give us a brief explanation of what the framework is.
Yeah, so a responsive framework is like a code that is used to create this. So this game is a website in the end. And so it is
It's prepared. A tool, man. So for real rudimentary purposes, it's you come up with a creative idea, and then the framework is the tool or environment in which it is then created.
Yeah, that's
in which your great mind stuff basically takes its physical being. Dun, dun, yeah. Dun. That sounded pretty good. Okay. Okay. So then now. During that process, then did it? Was there still a high level of interaction and still changes between you and design and then the development team? Were there still corrections? When people said, "Oh, that's not going to work."
Yeah. So there was a lot of interaction also with does the story match to the design that we have, and Yeah.
So highly reiterative, if you want to say it that way, right?
No, I think at some point we also said that we need to create the product. So with a very big group of people, I think it's much harder to have like this very iterative steps, because it would take like huge amounts of time. So at some point we wanted to just build it.
Okay. Yeah. Some point. Okay. You had to get it going. Okay. So, yeah. So I think you took us very nice through the whole process. So, and at the end of every project, there's, you know, a certain, retrospective or, lessons learned. So, in this case, what would you say were the three biggest challenges in this project in creating this content? Which we have to say now, it's award-winning content, but at this point in time, you know, you didn't know it would be award-winning, and you were just trying to push the envelope of what the quality envelope to a new level, right? And then and by making a game such an immersive content, you were pushing the envelope off the shelf content to a next level, right?
Yeah. So I said in the beginning, that what's very important for a good training is that the beginning idea. So, and that's also something that we spend a lot of time on. So that was like really a challenge to have this this basic story until we got to that point. That was quite a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So that was, I would say, a very big challenge to set the idea and stick to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, another challenge, I also mentioned it, the content depth. So that's, we had this, it's a huge topic, cybercrime. So there you can discuss so many topics. And the challenge was to keep it still short, pick the most important things and explain them in an easy to understand way for a wide audience. So I think that content was also a big challenge throughout the course. So in the end, we also simplified a little bit, but it still had to be accurate. And let me see. Yeah, I think the third challenge would be like this story. So we had this, a lot of things that we wanted to tell and we wanted to add to the course, but still we wanted to have like a clear storyline that it is like this hacker that tries to enter and tries to find some vulnerability. So, and we didn't want it to look very constructed. So to have like some kind of realistic hacker story.
Okay. So those were, you would say then the three biggest challenges. And I guess the end product, you know, was, or is, a success. If, like I said, this will be the first episode of e-learning brunch where you can actually look at something at the end. So we'll provide a link at the end. So now we have that. I think we wrapped up that very nicely. So thank you very much, Arne, for taking us through what it takes to create content in, you know, specifically in this case, you know, the off-the-shelf content and the challenges that lie therein. So now I'll present you with another challenge, because this is a segue to the somewhat strange off-topic part of this podcast and in the closing minutes of the podcast. And that would be, do you have a article or a book that you've recently read that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, it was in the field of cybercrime. I read an interesting book from, it's a Dutch author, Huip Modderkolk.
I hope that's available in English too then.
I think it's available in English, yeah.
Okay.
In English it's called something like "There's a War Going On and No One Can See It." Mm-hmm. And it's about cybercrime. And so it's something that so many people don't know that you have this, often peaceful world. Of course, not everywhere, but like the world as we know it here around us, especially or in Germany, looks quite peaceful. underneath that, there's a lot of activity going on of also governments trying to spy on other governments and trying to gain control of infrastructure. That's quite interesting to know.
Interesting. That gives us another insight on the depths or the lengths that you basically go through as an instructional designer to create the content. It's almost like an actor getting into his role. You didn't go out, though, and try to hack any systems just to get a feeling for it.
That would have been, of course, very professional to do that, to go that far.
That would have been the ultimate immersion to find out what it is. Okay, so
I can tell you about that.
No excursions into the darknet. Okay, so, and then the final two questions is, can you cook or do you cook? And if so, do you have a go-to recipe that you'd like to share?
I think especially since Corona, I've started to cook a lot more with the recipes. And I have this app, Captain Cook, which is a...
Captain Cook, okay.
Yeah, do you know it?
No, I don't yet.
Well, it is an app that only provides three recipes at the same time. And I really like that because I don't like these, what do I want to eat? And you have this like a database with thousands of recipes. And then I have to choose something and I don't like that. So I love the fact that there are only three recipes presented and then you can save
is this
them.
Per day or per?
Per day. Okay, yeah, okay. Every day, okay. Three new ones.
Okay, okay.
And and so I use it actually all the time when I want to decide what to eat.
Okay, but you have to get to the point where we're talking about the one recipe. So we've kind of swung a sly advertisement for Captain Cook, but what is the recipe that from Captain Cook that you...
Have any connections there. So it is like I'm just a user. I think one of my favorites is this tzatziki noodle salad, which is great.
Are we talking about tzatziki noodles or are we talking about zoodles, zucchini noodles?
No, it's like tzatziki, so it's with garlic and lemon, and there's a lot of dill in it, and then noodle salad with... tomatoes and
okay, you can send me the recipe later and
I
then
can
we'll
do
post
that.
It,
yeah.
We'll post it with the rest of our information at the end of this. So thank you very much, Anna. All the time we have today. So thank you very much, Arna, my interview guest for today and dear colleague of mine, which I've spent some time working with, which was fun. And for all the listeners out there, if you like the podcast, please smash the like button. Or if you have any comments, please let me know. As I said, we'll provide all the links to the various topics that we talked about in the podcast on our email page, or basically on our website, let's see what other things. As always, the information, like I said, can be found under hashtag eLearningBrunch. The next podcast will be in about 2 months. Sorry, this one was a little delayed because we had a little Corona action going on. So we had a couple of people missing from the podcast. So the next one will be in about 2 months. And be part of the e-learning revolution and empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to eLearning Brunch. Thank you and goodbye.